You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
What we're dealing with here is a total lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Done by Law, brought to you by the Federation of Community Legal Centres.
Welcome to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM. And also welcome to those listening via various podcast platforms or via streaming on 3cr.org.au. You're with Bonnie and Jimmy tonight, and it's just after 6pm on Tuesday, 7th of July, 2026. As always, we'd like to start tonight's show by acknowledging the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation as the original and rightful custodians of the land that 3CR broadcasts from. We also acknowledge that this week we're partway through NAIDOC Week, or the National Aborigines and Islander Day Observance Week. This year's theme is 50 Years of Deadly, after becoming a week-long event ever since 1975. We pay our deepest respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge these lands were stolen, never ceded, always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Thanks, Bonnie. Good to see you in the studio again tonight. Very excited to be here for a very exciting topic. Tonight's topic is a discussion of legal privilege and how this interacts with integrated legal services, which bring together legal services with other forms of social support, which we'll get into soon. Legal privilege, for those who don't know, is the fundamental right that protects confidential communications between a lawyer and their client from being disclosed. Integrated legal providers look to integrate legal services with other services such as health, financial, housing, in order to provide more holistic support. The model is becoming increasingly common and is showing positive results. But how does this interact with legal privilege and the need for legal services to uphold this obligation? The question is one of significant importance to community services and members alike, and one that the Victorian Law Reform Commission is attempting to shine light on in its inquiry into legal privilege and integrated legal assistance services. On that note, we are very privileged tonight, excuse the pun, to have three esteemed guests on Done by Law. From the Law Reform Commission itself, we are joined by the Honourable Anthony North KC, a former judge and the chairperson of the inquiry, who is happy to be called Tony for tonight's purposes, as well as Eve Gallagher, the inquiry's team leader. And of course, sticking with our community legal centre roots, we're also joined by Belinda Lowe, or B, principal lawyer of Eastern Community Legal Centre, the organisation that proposed the topic, leading to the initiation of this important topic that we'll be discussing on the show tonight. Welcome to the show, Tony, Eve and B.
Thank you.
So let's kick off the questions. I'll throw first to Tony. We wanted to start with the basics tonight. So if you could let us know and let our listeners know, what is legal professional privilege, firstly? How does it usually apply to the lawyer-client relationship? And then why is it so important?
Well, thanks, Bonnie. And as Jimmy said earlier, the legal privilege is a fundamental rule of the law, and what it says is that whatever you tell your lawyer as a client is totally confidential, can't be revealed to anybody by the lawyer. It can be revealed by you. It's your privilege as the client, so you can waive it. Why is it a fundamental rule of the law? Well, it's said that it's a way of encouraging people to tell their lawyers the whole story and without fear of it being told, for instance, to a court. You might make statements which are a disadvantage to you, to your lawyer, but they can't be revealed by the lawyer, just so that the lawyer can give you complete and total advice about what to do. The key elements, though, it's not just something that you can claim without qualifying, and the things that you need to satisfy in order for privilege to apply are, firstly, that what you say has to be confidential information, and it has to be given for the dominant purpose of either getting the advice or engaging in litigation. And that's where some of the problems that we'll later discuss arise.
Yeah, and so important. I think, you know, as a practicing lawyer, me and Bonnie are very aware of that need for clients to trust you and to be able to talk about these things really openly. But we're not the ones sharing our experience tonight. B, you're dialing in and your team proposed this topic to the Law Reform Commission. What motivated this proposal, and how do you see legal privilege playing out in integrated legal services? Can there be issues when us lawyers need to be so finicky about their professional duties?
My goodness, Kimmy, that's a lot of questions.
Well, we've only got a few minutes, B, but have a go at answering them for us.
You know there are a few lawyers in the room, so let's see how succinct I can be. Essentially, the Eastern Community Legal Centre operates quite a number of integrated practice models, and the question in relation to legal professional privilege and whether it could apply to our integrated practice models has been a continuing one for the last almost 10 years that we've been operating our models. And so what we know is that when somebody comes in to get legal advice from a law firm or from a legal centre, you normally expect that advice from a lawyer to the client one-on-one. However, in integrated practice programs, there's a lawyer working alongside at least one other community service professional, and the practitioners work very closely together to address the client's interconnected legal and other needs. And so by seeing clients together, people don't need to worry about having to tell the story to multiple professionals over and over. They don't need to worry about having to try to balance advice from a lawyer against advice from a financial counsellor that might seem to be contradictory because they are from different organisations. As Tony has explained, privilege traditionally only applies to a client-lawyer relationship. So if privilege is challenged, there's a greater risk that a client's confidential information can be subpoenaed, which could potentially damage a client's legal position in an integrated service model. Another factor which we know is particularly relevant for CLC clients, particularly in family violence situations, is that challenging a client's privileged information could risk exposing critical safety information to other parties and therefore placing clients and their children at significant risk. Another thing also is that practitioners, legal and community service practitioners, constantly carry the stress of ensuring they're meeting their own professional obligations and supporting the other practitioner to meet theirs. Practitioners are also really, really focused on managing the client's legal matter and other often urgent matters in the client's life. And these can include mental health challenges, housing insecurity, financial pressures, as well as the big one that I've already spoken about, being safety. So without a clear legal position to guarantee this way of working, clients therefore are being asked to accept the risk of possible future legal challenge to expose their confidential information, which Eastern Community Legal Centre believes is a really unfair burden to ask of clients. And it also creates significant challenges in the operation of such programs in practice generally. So because there has not been a clear legal position in relation to legal professional privilege and integrated service models, this operates as a barrier to some organisations in setting up integrated practice programs at all, which of course means that community members are potentially missing out on the huge benefits that you can get from these programs. And I just want to really stress, this is not just an issue in theory or in practice. We see a lot of clients who've experienced significant trauma, and for them, they aren't always able to address the legal question in a particular appointment. The most important thing in that moment might be their need for safety, their need to find a roof over their head. They might need to work through their trauma because of years of experiencing family violence or elder abuse, and completing their legal documents triggers them to break down in the appointment. And if that happens, it's not the lawyer who's the most important person in that room. It's not their expertise that's required. It's the expertise of the family violence or elder abuse advocate or the financial counsellor to be able to support the client to address those immediate needs before they can even turn their mind to the legal needs. And so we believe that, and we know actually, that community service professionals play a critical role in enabling clients to engage with and pursue their legal rights. And it's very important that lawyers and advocates can work side by side equally to address the client's whole circumstances. Because whilst legal advice that only addresses a legal question might technically be correct, if it doesn't take into account a person's intersecting health, safety, social or financial issues, the fact of the matter is the client may not be able to take on and act on that advice in the first place.
Yeah, B, you raise some really important points and I think lay the case very clearly and persuasively for this rule to change and adapt to how we are now delivering legal services to be more trauma-informed and safe for our clients. So I want to then come to Eve. In terms of this topic that's been raised from the perspective of the Law Reform Commission, how did the commission, or how does the commission see this topic as such an important topic to tackle?
So before the commission starts a community law reform project like this one, we ask community members and organisations to nominate topics for reform. And honestly, we get so many fantastic topics and I wish we could do them all, but unfortunately we can't. So we have a set of criteria against which we assess them. So that will be things like it has to impact a significant proportion of the Victorian population or a significantly disadvantaged proportion of the population. And then in relation to this particular topic, Eastern Community Legal Centre put forward a really compelling proposal that highlighted that this is something that has gone on for 50 years, essentially unaddressed since community legal centres first emerged. But then over the last 10 or 15 years, it's having an even greater detrimental impact on clients and community legal centres as funding and demand for integrated services has risen. What also caught our attention was the fact that it doesn't appear, well, as I mentioned, that there is a solution that any other jurisdiction in Australia has sought to grapple with this tension between legal privilege and integrated services, notwithstanding its long history. And when we looked overseas and did a cross-jurisdictional analysis, we couldn't find a model that could be easily placed in the Victorian context. There are other ways they've resolved that tension, but that's not appropriate in the Victorian context. So there's really nothing for a client or a community legal centre or an advocate to point to and say, hey, listen, here's the solution, let's do it here. So given all of this and the fact that the role of the commission is to help the community update the law in line with contemporary values and expectations, it really was a perfect project for us to take on.
Fantastic. Thanks, Eve. And Tony, I understand you have a role to play in all this as the chairperson. What's most important to you in getting this inquiry done right, so to speak?
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. Well, I'm like a legal sheepdog because I've got the team that's working on the project, and that's led by Eve, and those team members, they do a sort of preliminary scoping of the work, then they do a paper which sets out the issues, and then the major, most important function of the commission is then to go out and talk to people, consult with them and hear what they say, hear what the community says, hear what the people working in integrated practices say, hear what judges and courts say about this old rule and why it hasn't kept pace with, you know, modern practices of delivering services to people. And then the end of the day, the team produces a draft, and then above me, above the team and including me, are the commissioners. So the commission is usually about 9 people from all different walks of life whose main characteristic is an ability to analyse legal issues. They're not necessarily experts in the area because we draw on experts in the area separately. And that group of 9, if I can call them that, They scrutinise the team's work at every stage. Consultation paper, reports about consultations, and then the draft. And to do it right, as you were asking, Jimmy, to do it right is for all those people to work together. And so in the end, we get a paper that's deeply researched and based on what we've been told. That's how we work, and it's proven to be a very successful way of operating if you listen to people who read our reports and understand that they're the result of extremely detailed research. Often our papers are referred to years later for the content of what we've gathered in those research projects.
Yeah.
So coming then back to this current inquiry, I understand the Law Reform Commission has proposed some options to address this issue. Tony or Eve or both, could you talk us through what those options are?
Yeah, so I'll start. To understand the two reform options we're seeking feedback on, you need to understand the two integrated service models that we have found predominantly exist in Victoria. So the first model is loosely integrated services, which is when you can see a lawyer and a social service provider at the one organisation, but there are strict information barriers between the professionals and they never meet together with the client, and that's precisely to preserve privilege. So what we're proposing in that scenario is that the client retains legal privilege, so that those conversations are protected, but then they gain a new social service professional privilege over the conversations they have with their nurse or financial counsellor or whoever it might be, and so that those conversations will have a greater level of protection than they do now. Tony, do you want to do the other one?
Yeah, thanks. I left the hard one for Eve to explain. the issues are really quite difficult legally, and the Commission has two options in the paper so far, but I should stress the fact that these are sort of preliminary ideas. These are ideas that we want to hear about, and it sometimes happens that after discussion in the consultations with people who really work in the area that we come up with different or more nuanced examples. The other option, it's sort of easier to explain because it applies to the fully integrated services. That's where a solicitor meets with social worker or financial advisor or all any manner of other professional. And what we're proposing there is that the privilege that exists in relation to lawyers extend to everyone in the room. So that's quite easy to explain and more difficult to work out in detail, but we're hoping that when we talk to all the people at work in the area, we'll get some further ideas.
Yeah, like many issues in this space, a great idea and how we implement it in practice is another question that needs exploration.
So now throwing to B, we would like to know from your perspective, what are your thoughts on those proposed reform options so far? Do you have any hopes or concerns for how these suggestions would play out on the ground?
Thanks, Bonnie. As the Eastern Community Legal Centre is still in the process of our own internal consultations and also involved in the community legal sector wide consultations on the proposals put forward, I'm not in a position right now to speak in depth around our views on each option, but I will just say that we are immensely pleased that the Law Reform Commission has drilled into the details and really sought to engage with the issues that we all face in this area. The inquiry and the release of the consultation has provided such a significant structural opportunity for the community legal sector and legal assistance sector to consider these reform options, as they both respond to actual real challenges that the sector has been grappling with for quite some time. So we're really grateful for the opportunity to submit a response, and we'll be doing so definitely by the deadline of the 3rd of August. And we really encourage others in the sector to do so as well.
A strong plug there for submissions into the inquiry. Moving nicely along to our next question. Eve,
to ensure these benefits can flourish and we can see what can happen from this inquiry, what's the next steps for the Law Reform Commission?
So as Tony and Bea have mentioned, we're currently in the consultation phase. So our consultation paper has been released. If anyone would like to participate, the easiest way for them to do that is to go to our website where you'll find that paper. It contains our early thinking and all of the details. There are 7 questions in particular that we're seeking feedback on. You'll also find information on our website about how to make a written submission or consult with us. And as Bea just said, the deadline is the 3rd of August. It is important to say if anyone has any concerns about, say, privacy or safety, but they do want to tell us even just a case study, the submission process can look quite formal. But if you're a client of a community legal centre and you've had a really fantastic experience, or alternatively, potentially your records were in fact subpoenaed and you want to tell us how that was for you, please just give us a call and we'll do our best to make sure we can meet with you in a way that is comfortable for you.
Fantastic. And I think you alluded to it there, but it's not just lawyers who are making submissions to this inquiry, right? Like, can anyone who feels like they've got something to say about this model?
Yeah, absolutely. So the law is quite tricky, but we are working on comms and posters and other ways to access clients in a much more sort of plain English, client-friendly way. The report itself is a bit hard to understand.
Yeah. Law never makes it easy, but...
Brilliant. And I mean, it's such a interesting and important topic, and I know our opinionated listeners will want to learn more about this. I hear you have a new episode of the Commission's podcast coming out on this topic. Tony,
yes,
would you like to tell us some more?
Yes, thanks, Bonnie. We have a podcast series called Old Law, New Law, which is very appropriate to this topic because we think it's an old law that hasn't kept up with the new way of delivering integrated practices. Mm. So perfect title for our podcast. So you can access that on our website or on Spotify, Apple, or your usual streaming sources. Tomorrow is the day for the launch of the new one on this topic, and so if you're excited about the topic, tune in.
It's very exciting. We are featuring interviews with 3 guests, all community lawyers, one of whom did have her client's records subpoenaed, her legal records and her social work records, and you'll hear all about how distressing it was for everyone involved.
Fantastic. So that comes out tomorrow, 8th of July, 2026. Yep. Fantastic. We'll be making sure to put all the links for both submissions and your website and the podcast in the bio of the podcast episode. So we're already running out of time, which is crazy to me, but luckily there's a whole other podcast for you guys to follow on with if you found this episode of use. But if you're all willing, I'd like a final comment from each of you on what you hope to see as a result of this inquiry, as well as the future of integrated legal centres in our community. Bea, I might start with you.
Okay. Thank you. So we in the community legal sector, we're really aware that it can be very difficult to separate the legal problem from other issues that are as equally important, such as housing, health, financial stress and trauma that people are experiencing as they walk through the doors of community legal centres. And we also know that clients don't always seek out legal advice from a lawyer early. That's the problem of, you know, what we know as unmet legal need. So many people either might not realise they require legal advice, or their legal problem is so intertwined with other issues that it's become extremely complex for them to address. And so when they go to their other providers, such as their health providers or their housing providers who might have an integrated practice program, they'll be able to have all those issues addressed. So we're really hoping that this inquiry will provide a lot of clarity for integrated practice models across the community legal sector.
Fantastic. Thanks, Bea. And Tony and Eve, two studio guests, what have we got?
So I would like to see a solution that allows community legal centres to fully realise their role as critical innovative service providers for some of our most vulnerable community members. As to what that solution is, I couldn't say. That's up to the community and the commissioners.
And Tony?
Yeah, well, what I hope people can take away from today's session and from the podcast is, of course, everything we've said about the actual project, but also an understanding about the work of the Law Reform Commission and how it's there to keep the law modern, and in this case, to keep the old law about privilege, which is very important, relevant to a new way of delivering services to people, namely the integrated practice idea, because otherwise we're going to have a law which is stultified by the past. So the Law Reform Commission's role is really well illustrated by this particular project, and I think it would be great if the community understood how we worked and what we're directed towards, which is, you know, towards a betterment of our community in Victoria.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for shining a bit of light on that topic here in the studio tonight. And thank you so much, B, for dialing in while on leave, I understand. So thank you very much for the commitment.
Pleasure.
Jimmy, as you said before, we'll put all the links in the podcast bio. And we wish you all the very best for the remainder of the inquiry, and may it lead to positive and long-standing reform. You're all very welcome back to come onto the show where there's more to talk about this topic. You've been listening to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, streamed at 3cr.org.au and available on various podcast platforms.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.